You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for April 5th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Me Time Chalet on the Appalachian Trail, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal.
What is it with Republicans these days?
I know. You know what? I really hate to start shows off like Ed Schultz.
Yeah.
To start off.
Yeah.
Good evening, everybody. Let's talk about stupid fucking Republicans.
Yeah. After a while, and Reverend Al, too, did the same thing. Hey, Republicans, you're a bunch of idiots. Yeah. Oh, I hate that, too. But this week lost their fucking minds over gay marriage to the point where they're saying such stupid shit that it's like Hannity.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to talk about. So I'm going to talk about the Obama daughter's vacation.
Right. And tell you where they're staying and, you know.
Yeah. And
it's the screaming baby in the row behind you.
Yeah.
Really try hard to ignore it. But at some point, it's like, could you please shut the baby up? Could you take it to a different car? I know. But they have finally screamed loud enough for us to warrant saying, what the fuck is up with these people?
Yeah. Yeah.
For the umpteenth time.
And I think they've got nothing to run against at this point. And that's their
it's driving
demon
crazy.
Spawn. If they can't, there's nothing they can do but talk about bestiality.
Well, and when you're absolutely stuck, when your position is entire. Let me put it this way: if the Republican Party vanished tomorrow, the conservative movement, the hate radio, Fox News, vanished tomorrow, you and I would have plenty to talk about the next day.
Absolutely,
all kinds of things that need our attention, that need our care, that are of interest to us well beyond what they're doing today.
Yep.
If the Obama administration vanished tomorrow, they would have nothing to say.
Yeah.
Because their entire shtick is what an ogre, what a monster, what a tyrant he is, and what America-hating thugs every liberal is. And we are now going to just invent reasons to be angry at people who we have basically invented out of whole cloth.
Well, and in addition to that, this gay marriage thing, which is changing so quickly, that there's this chart out there on Tumblr of U.S. senators in favor of marriage equality, and it's just this peak that just goes up to 50, you know, from nothing 3 years ago.
And there's
50 in the space of 2 years.
And you know who was at the low end of that bell curve for a long, long time?
Who?
All the liberals.
Yeah, that's right.
All the liberals. This is the thing that is, it is really for me as an observer, as a cultural observer, is fascinating, is that the gay marriage debate comes down to an argument between conservatives about whether or not gay marriage is conservative.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
you know, to his credit, that has been David Brooks's argument all along.
Yes. It's also
just the conservative thing to do is to allow gay people to get married because that puts them in the white picket fence standard that I want everyone to live up to.
Which is stupid because it's an argument about his whole column. I'm not even going to talk about it.
No.
Other people have written fine about it. I'm not going to do that. But his whole dumb argument was peevish and petty and really mean-spirited. Go read Matt Taibbi. He writes about it very well. But it was that this libertine lifestyle that the gays have embodied, they finally decided to give it up in exchange for the white picket fence.
Yeah. Well, and Dan Savage makes a really good – I just pulled out his book off of my shelf, the one Love, Marriage, and My Family, which is from 2006, I think, where he talks about the struggle that he had with either his or his partner's, who is now his husband. They got married in Canada a year ago, maybe. Not a year ago. This year. Dan Savage drank champagne with Chris Hayes over getting married. But his book from 2006 talks about the struggle that his or his partner's Catholic mother, who is full on P flag, rainbow, sticker in her car, you know, 80 years old, but has totally come around to, yes, these are my kids. This is my
grandchild. Ask me about my gay son. Yeah.
Ask me about my gay son and my grandchild, because they've adopted a boy.
Yeah.
And she was the one who pushed them and said, well, why aren't you guys getting married? I want a wedding. I want to, you know.
Yeah.
And he writes about this very eloquently. And, you know, their son, who at the time of this book was six, said, well, you shouldn't get married. Married people is for men and women to do.
Right.
And this, the struggle of, is this a heterosexual value that we're adopting, is something that he explores. Uh-huh. And he says, you know, for people that think that getting married means that we're adopting straight values, and that's some sort of victory for straight values, I would like every straight person who's moved into the gay hipster part of any major American city to move out and go to the suburbs.
Right.
And I would like every woman who's put a strap on, you know, because Dan Savage does go there and had butt sex with her boyfriend, to please stop it. You're only allowed to do missionary position from now on.
Missionary lights out for
you're
God.
You're not allowed to take on any gay features to your relationships or lifestyle whatsoever. You will.
And white people, no enjoying jazz, or rap, or
men
blues
can't get manicures. Straight men and
Stay with your own kind.
Which leads me to wonder what the Georgia GOP chair was talking about this week when she said these two men might be both straight as an arrow and they'll just get married to get benefits.
Yeah. Well, look, I'd like you to do the whole quote, but I want to sign off on the conservative argument inside the conservative world because I don't even know what conservative means anymore. Yeah. I know what it means from the outside looking in. I have a very clear utilitarian understanding of what it has come to mean in America today. But this argument between the Andrew Sullivans of the world, first of all, David Brooks is simply wrong, because this is not an argument about libertinism versus constraint. It's an argument about your freedom to choose
and to have legal rights
that everyone else
has. Your partner and have a legal relationship with them that's recognized by the government.
You
yes,
want the
period.
Rights everyone else has.
Right.
Period. That's
all it's about.
And the idea that you've turned it into something else because you've got a stick up your ass, and which you're not allowed to do, David Brooks, because you're not gay, is absolutely hilarious and sad and desperately trying to cram one more social issue into your weird little corner of the universe. But this argument that the graph you cited.
Yeah, yeah.
Conservatism means protecting and defending existing institutions against sudden radical change. And that institution has suddenly and radically changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, you can't really say that it's a embracing gay marriage is a conservative virtue. You can say the outcome of a stable family and a stable society is a virtue that everybody wants. I don't know anybody who doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anybody who thinks that's a bad idea. So you can't claim that as an exclusively conservative property. But you can't say that people suddenly embracing a fairly large institutional change to a very old institution is anything but a liberal or radical change. And you can call it whatever you want. But the idea that conservatives are fighting over this because each of them claims the mantle that is diametrically opposed to the other is funny to watch from the outside and very descriptive of what's going on in the movement generally. And what I call, in Andrew Sullivan's case, what I call pineapple ice cream conservatism, which is anything I happen to like at the moment is a conservative virtue. Anything I don't happen to like at the moment, like if I ever got sick on Thai food is not a conservative virtue because it made me sick once.
Oh, wow.
Like, no, dude, you know, you don't want to go there and talk about who was right all along.
Yeah.
Because then you lose your mantle as a conservative, in which case you're just another gay liberal writing about pot. And there's a lot of other people who do that better than you do. So anyway.
Well, and our own Senator Mark Kirk, who's had serious health problems and kind of woken up to a lot of things as a result of that, it appears.
Uh-huh.
His argument for gay marriage, and he came out for marriage equality this week, was a libertarian argument.
Yes.
You love who you love, and the government should not get in between anybody who loves another person, period. That's just libertarianism.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And we can – and this is the thing that just irritates me. Can we agree that this is about letting people – letting everybody be treated the same? I know I sound like Bill O'Reilly now, but everybody just gets treated the same, gets the same virtues, the same rights, the same responsibilities, the same everything.
Yeah.
And what you do – with another consenting adult is entirely your own damn business and none of mine.
Well, and let me extrapolate on that a little bit, because you said responsibility. And mm-hmm. I think that then allows us a springboard to talk with David Brooks about morality. And that's the thing he wants to talk about. Okay, let's talk about that.
Uh-huh.
We can then have conversations with our kids, because we're not talking about the gay. We can talk about don't use people. Ask for consent, make yeah. sure you have enthusiastic consent. And this whole Steubenville thing, we can talk about rape being rape and not legitimate rape versus non-legitimate rape. We can have real conversations about how we expect people to behave, gay, straight, whatever, that we expect people to behave a certain way sexually that doesn't hurt anybody and that doesn't abuse anyone or take advantage of someone. And then you're really getting into, I think, what David Brooks should want, which is morality of
right.
how you treat people
and
really matters.
Want,
and let's have that conversation.
And if you want to have that conversation, and I certainly would be up for it, then the place you start, I forget who I'm stealing this from. I'm probably ripping this off from Matt Taibbi, but I don't know for sure, but I'm definitely borrowing it from someone. If you'd like to start a conversation about the destruction of marriage, the breakdown of the family, the high divorce rate, the person you don't start with is Rush Limbaugh.
No.
Whining about marriage and the stability of marriage and the breakdown of marriage among the blacks and the Latinos from a guy who's been married 4 times. And nobody in his audience seemed to notice that he's a massive hypocrite. You don't start there. You know who you start with? You start with Henry VIII.
Yes.
You start with the elites who didn't want to be married anymore according to the rules of the church that they invented. So they invented another church that would let them get away with what they wanted to get away with. And you start with popes who would annul marriages that had been in effect and produced children for 20 years because the person was a king or well-connected or bribed them or what have you. You start with the people who broke the marriage vow as eternal and unbreakable first. And then
the elites
get...
can still buy annulments.
Sure.
I mean, Newt Gingrich did everything the Catholic Church told him to do, including, as I suspect, all that Tiffany's charging went to bishops buying nice watches. I'll bet you a nickel. The money that he spent at Tiffany's wasn't all for Callista.
No, it was annulment.
Give gifts to American bishops to buy his way into the Catholic Church.
And so start there. But this is what is so fucking annoying. Once again, we are at a place where the have-nots, the minorities, the outsiders, the dispossessed, the weak, the people who have no political clout are simply arguing what the elites already have.
Exactly.
If you're elite, you can have an abortion anytime you want.
Yep.
You can fly any place on the planet and nobody's going to say boo about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Meghan McCain, you can have much sex.
This is my argument. Exactly.
Yeah. This is exactly your argument.
Place. Yeah.
But
Meghan McCain, everybody knows Meghan McCain is not going to be a virgin on her wedding night, but she's rich.
Right.
And if she needs to fly to Norway for a week and then shop at Dubai after her abortion, she can do that. And I'm not saying she's had an abortion.
No.
But she sure is pro birth control.
Uh-huh. And she has lots of gay friends.
Yeah, and she has lots of gay friends. So you
cannot begin the discussion with the last group that we've kicked to the curb asking loudly to simply be included in what everybody else gets. You don't get to start the discussion there.
And that's true of health insurance. That's true of marriage rights. That's true of everything. Equal pay, living wage. I'm so tired of Joe Scarborough. I just can't stand him anymore.
On my liberal television, the guy who has 3 hours of liberal TV on my liberal
and never has. I mean, you and I were absolutely shocked Thursday night
and
that Chris Hayes
pleased
had 2 striking fast food minimum wage workers on his show.
Labor.
labor.
Poor
actual
labor.
People, not labor union representatives.
No.
Labor.
Real working people.
You and
people.
I were both thinking out loud, you know, is this like the Smothers Brothers? He's going to get canned?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Because he actually did.
Yeah.
Real working class journalism and had real working class people on his show.
Which,
and so I tweeted that I can't wait until Morning Joe has some striking fast food wage slaves. Oh, wait, never mind.
Never mind.
And somebody said, oh, no, I'm sure that Dan Senior will be on to talk about that. Yeah. And his insights will be really important.
I'm sure that both Mark Halpern and Mike Bonnicle think they don't make enough. So it's pretty much like being a minimum wage.
I need a living wage.
Yeah. I'm sure they don't. They're both bitching about their salaries constantly.
Constantly. So.
But the point being that if you are a New York Times op-ed columnist or another person who controls, who actually sets the parameters for a public debate, you can set it wherever you want. But it is illegitimate to begin discussions of abortion or gay marriage or any other rights issue, civil rights issue, with the people who have been left out asking to be let in to what other people already have. You are morally obligated, if you really want to take on marriage and marriage equality and what the hell happened to marriage and how come so many people marriages break up, do not start with the gays. You have to start with Henry VIII. Yes. You have to start with people who broke the institution to begin with. Not saying that it shouldn't be broken. I happen to think divorce is a wonderful thing in the right hands. I happen to think...
Well, you were saying that. Who was saying that to you?
Oh, it was, I forget the, I think it was Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Who was saying
Everybody
it to me.
Says, I'm like, sorry you got divorced.
There's no such thing as a bad divorce. Nobody's ever, no Wait happy up. Marriage has ever said, you know what we should do, honey? This weekend we should go get divorced. That's not how happy marriages end. Divorce ends when it becomes intolerable and you just can't stand it anymore and you have to end it. And that should be an option for everyone, no matter what, even Rush Limbaugh. But you can't. Having bought into the fact that you're allowed to end marriages and you're allowed to have prenuptial agreements and you're allowed to have all these special out clauses and so on, and accepted the fact that it's a contract.
Yeah.
A prenuptial agreement is a contract. You can't then turn around and say, but those people can't have what I already have because the Bible says so. Fuck you. You have no idea what the Bible says. You clearly have no idea what the Bible says. So just shut up now. Anyway. Speaking of crazy right-wing people.
Yeah, let's go.
Talking out of their ass.
Let's go through our list. First of all, Louis Gohmert.
Please, go right
ahead. Who linked sex with animals to limiting the number of rounds of ammunition a gun owner could buy.
Doesn't everything end up with somebody fucking a goat?
Having sex with sheep, yeah.
Everything.
So that was good. Then the Georgia GOP chair said, you may be straight as an arrow, and you may have a friend that's straight as an arrow. I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. But if you had a job with the government where you had a wonderful health plan, what would prohibit you from saying that you're gay?
Uh-huh.
And y'all get married, she said y'all, get married and still live as separate. But you get all the benefits. Well, what is to prevent two straight people from doing that?
Uh-huh.
It's called fraud.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Well,
it's called fraud.
I think straight people have done that in green card situations and, yeah.
I'm sure it was either... Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart, who said, because, yeah.
Oh, no, that's Colbert what said, yeah. That's what straight men wanted.
Every straight guy, be mistaken for gay everywhere you go.
Everywhere you go. And tell all the women and straight men in their lives that they're married gay.
I'm married gay, so I can't be with you. But this is the point at which you step back for 1 minute. Look at what this crazy woman said. Look at what Louis Gohmert said. And realize they just have like thought bricks in their head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They really only are.
And one of them is animal sex.
Animal sex, gays, and guns, and the Bible. And they don't know what. They just keep rearranging the same idiotic sentence fragments over and over and over again, Mad Lib style. And what comes out of their mouth is crazier and stupider and more ridiculous and more infantile and more. Completely disqualifying for public service, and they keep getting elected. That's the important
part.
By
people whose world is Fox News, and we really are living in two Americas. It's very, very sad.
Entirely different countries, and Louis Gohmert is a representative from that other country. And the sad thing is, it's not like he's a diplomat that we can kick out.
No, and I wanted to say about Stephen Colbert too, if I may. because he endorsed his sister.
He did.
And he did it, he says, because of Morning Joe. Mike Barnicle. Mark, he was first name basis with Mark Sanford.
Yeah.
Mark Sanford. Mark, let's, if we can, talk about the value of honesty among politicians in any campaign.
Yes.
A lot of people were struck by your honesty, Mark Sanford.
Yes, yes.
Yes. And after, Stephen Colbert said he hoped that Mike Barnicle could breathe through his nose.
Yes.
And it because deep throat was, you know, back in the day. But now here's Mike Barnicle doing the same thing to Mark Sanford. Now, what I wanted to credit here about this is Heather at Crooks and Liars. It was absolutely psychic. In when Colbert did this, when he endorsed his sister and said, you know, Mike Barnicle basically is a deep throat journalist there.
He's a whore.
This is Heather. I'm quoting from her post on this, saying, I look forward to seeing if the crew on Morning Joe actually acknowledges this segment and responds to it, or if they choose to try to pretend it didn't happen, or worse yet, if they respond and selectively edit Colbert's remarks and spare both Scarborough and Barnicle from the worst of his criticism. Uh-huh. Guess which one they did?
Yes.
They deleted everything that Colbert said about Barnicle.
Yes. Because I don't see it. It didn't happen.
Exactly. I'm not going to show what I just said yesterday morning on this show about Mark Sanford and being honest as a politician.
Yes. Once you were caught cheating on your wife, cold with your hand
and missing for 2 weeks, including Father's Day from your four sons,
and lying about it,
and lying about it,
at your office,
and not telling your attorney or your lieutenant governor or your wife where you were.
Once you got caught doing all that cold and you couldn't weasel your way out of it, you were completely honest about the fact that you had fallen in love. And now you're running an entire campaign based on the power of your personal redemption and how you've learned an important lesson about Mark Sanford and who Mark Sanford really is. Mark Sanford.
That's the whole point is this guy is the most narcissistic person I've ever seen in politics.
Yeah.
His former wife was interviewed about his totally honest press conference where he confessed that he had fallen in love and that this was at a terrible price to pay. And his wife wasn't there today, but, you know, she's not here, but I'll be talking to her. And the reporter asked his wife, did he call you after that press conference? And she said, yeah. And he asked, how'd I do?
Yeah. Is it the case that she found out about his affair on the news?
I don't know.
But it was.
I do know that he asked her, how'd I do?
Uh-huh.
And then he also asked her to run his current campaign for him.
His comeback campaign.
He prances around with his quote unquote fiance. Uh-huh. And wow.
Because
he didn't want her to run against him, I think was the reason.
Because he's a Christian.
Yeah, well, and he's a C Street Christian too. Don't forget that.
Oh yeah, he's a
and he's he was in the lead for impeaching Clinton back when he was in the House before.
And he lies. And guess what? He just won the Republican primary.
Yep, he just won the Republican primary, and apparently, getting back to this Appalachian Trail thing.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that it was so kind of not alarming at first that he had just gone off by himself without telling anyone where he was this was a habit of his. And if I had four boys in school with a man who left me and didn't tell me where he was going, and I didn't know for 2 weeks if he was alive or dead.
Uh-huh.
That in itself is grounds for divorce, in my personal opinion. But narcissism.
But this gigantic.
The guy is sick.
Now, politics, like entertainment and the priesthood,
attracts narcissists. Yes, it does.
Among other good civil servants and kind-hearted souls and do-gooders, it also attracts a staggeringly large number of narcissists and egomaniacs.
I'm not claiming that Bill Clinton is some sort of saint in that area, or a lot of other politicians as well. No.
But now that you know beyond any doubt who this guy is.
Yeah,
what he does.
It's a psycho level of narcissism in this guy.
And you have just renominated
him. Him to represent your party in the election. Yeah. And gotten, I mean, Joe Scarborough has openly fellated this guy on his show of, and you know, one of the reasons you should really vote for Mark Sanford is he worked in Wall Street. He's a smart guy, Wall Street.
And the cherry on top of this, on his now Jeff Gannon-like career as a whore/journalist, Mike Barnicle compliments him on his honesty.
And
wonders if maybe his honesty was what's
going to hurt him. Well, his honesty might have some consequences for him in the campaign.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just can't be as honest as you are.
In the same sense that your professionalism, Mike Barnicle, is having some consequences for you.
No,
as well.
That's not having any consequences at all.
So,
North Carolina politicians, Republicans, want to make Christianity the official state religion. And they specifically said that they don't have to follow the U.S. Constitution.
No. I thought we settled that.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And they're also going to try to institute a poll tax on the parents of college students who want to register on campus to vote. So we'll see how far that goes with the Department of Justice. That'll be fun.
It's like we just keep refighting the Civil War.
Yeah.
We dress it up in different clothes and different eras, and we use different weapons and different, but it's the same fucking people over and over again, and it's the same thing. They have what they think other people shouldn't have. And as conservatives, they want to protect their institutions from the depredations and the attacks of these Arriviste outsiders, these gays, these black voters, these people who want to take their shit away from them. And that is the consistent through line for all conservatism. Modern American conservatism is protecting white, male, Christian, conservative prerogatives and privileges, because that's what God wants them to have. And you can trace, I swear to God, every one of these fucking lines right back to that. And to whoever's the best spokesman for that, I mean, Mark Sanford is the perfect spokesman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's like, absolutely. No, I get to do whatever the fuck I want because I'm white and I'm Christian and I'm really sorry you caught me.
Oh, and by the way, David Koch is contributing to my congressional campaign, and those 37 ethics violations that I settled. We're just not going to talk about that because redemption.
There's redemption. I've been redeemed. God has forgiven me, and therefore shut up because freedom and low taxes.
And the blood of the lamb is in the form of campaign contributions from David Koch. So there you go.
And then there was this lovely article in the New York Times that was sent to me by at least a couple of people, including Pure Kona. So bless his heart.
We do want to thank our listeners for sending us good stuff via email.
Oh, yeah. We get the best shit. You and I have been talking, and other people have been writing, including me, for years and years and years, about the fact that the secret Republican weapon is the deletion of memory.
Absolutely.
I did a post called "Like a Virgin."
Yeah.
They just wipe the past out. The whole Etch-a-Sketch idea, which they blurted out on the air, is how we run campaigns. We make a lot of promises, and then we shake them up, and the stupid people forget we ever said that. The idea that the same people who were screaming about get rid of those fucking surpluses 12 years ago are the same people who scream about these deficits are so bad. We have to cut everything because, you know, deficits are awful. The same people who, you know, believe one thing on a Tuesday and deny it on a Thursday are the same people over and over and over again. They're all in the same party. They're all of the same mind. And it's all about obliterating their memory. And another post I wrote a few years ago was on Memento. The defining characteristic of conservatism is the inability to form new political memories after
and remember an hour ago. Yeah, yeah.
They just do it. There's just nothing. And I don't know if you remember this woman. I forget where this came from. See, speaking of failing memory. But there was some conversation going back and forth about the Clinton era and what Clinton did and how this and that and this and that. I think it was like S.E. Cup or some other clown like that. But one of the commentators who was at the table was rude enough to say, "You mean when you impeached Bill Clinton?"
Yeah,
Yeah. And there was this look of absolute, like he'd slapped her.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not allowed to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're pretending that never happened. But it did happen.
Yes, it did.
But we forgot it. And we forgot, you know, people have forgotten entire wars and what they said during those wars over the last 10 years. So this article shows up in the New York Times. And it's, I'm going to read just a little bit from it. The amnesia I'm talking about is the act of deleting memories rather than merely a natural process of forgetting. Forgetting can result from the passage of time. The act of deleting memories, however, is about actively winnowing out people's memories of the past and the present. And then it comes to pass, because you read the title, that this is about China.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the article is entitled On China's State-Sponsored Amnesia. But see if this doesn't sound exactly like what we have been saying all along about the conservative movement in this country. In China, memory deletion is turning the younger generation into selective memory automatons. Now, in this country, and this is a brief aside from me, it's not age that is the dividing line. It's political affiliation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's absolutely the same process. Memory of history and the present, yesterday and today, are all going through this uniform process of deletion and are being lost without trace. And he talks about students who had no idea that millions of people were starved to death in China.
Yeah.
And had never heard of such a thing and were indignant that anyone would suggest their country would ever do such a thing. Like America dropping the first atom bomb on a civilian population. America would never do such a thing. As one of my stepfather's students stated flatly.
To his face, yeah.
Never happened. And he had to tell him not only would it happen, it did happen.
And we did it twice. And we did it to stop the war. And you can have a debate about that, but we did it.
It was a shock to this college student that America had used two nuclear weapons, as a matter of fact. Anyway, the article doesn't conclude, but the last paragraph I'll read is, I used to assume history and memory would always triumph over temporary aberrations and return to the rightful place. It now appears the opposite is true. In today's China, amnesia trumps memory. Lies are surpassing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Fabrications have become the logical link to fill historical gaps. Even memories of events that have only just taken place are being discarded at a dazzling pace,
mm-hmm.
with barely intelligible fragments of all that remain for people to hold on to. That is the history of American conservatism. That is the only common bond that everyone from Rush Limbaugh to David Brooks to David Frum to Andrew Sullivan all have in common.
Well, and I wonder if that isn't why the question that we opened this podcast with about, you know, what is up with Republicans is that they are just in at such a dizzying pace rewriting their history to the point where they have to say crazier shit the next day or you'll remember the crazy shit they said yesterday.
This is believe it or not, this isn't about me touting my blog, but this is I wrote a post about having a bomb in your head.
Mm-hmm.
There's an explosive device planted in the Republican brain, and it is activated if you remember parts of the past that you are required to forget.
Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, the WMDs are in Syria, Rick Glass.
It can't
be that they weren't in Iraq.
When you step away from the political process or the day-to-day sort of exchange among our elected officials and media and step back in, it's astonishing how much crazier it gets every day. It's astonishing how much crazier Louis Gohmert gets every day, because the number of things you are permitted to use as building blocks for thinking on the right is getting smaller and smaller. You can only talk about deficits starting in 2008.
Yeah.
You can only talk about war starting in 2008. You can only talk about Reagan as he existed in your fake memory of him as has been invented by the right. You can't talk about the real Reagan or what the real Reagan did. David Brooks tried that. He tried to rewrite on the pages of the New York Times the fact that Reagan ran a racist campaign, that he made direct racial appeals to Southern whites to get them to vote for him as part of the extension of Nixon's Southern strategy. And he got bent over a barrel by his fellow columnists who just had enough, who just said, no, fuck that. You can't. No, sorry, David, you got this fucking wrong. But it is incredibly inconvenient to him to have a Reagan who was a racist or who at least used race to drive angry Southern whites to the polls to vote for him. Therefore, it never happened. Jerry Falwell was never in the party. He just ceased to exist. Phyllis Schlafly isn't there. The Tea Party, which Mr. Brooks once embraced, is now just a fringe, except an inconvenience.
Phyllis Schlafly is on the dais. A picture of her is on the dais at CPAC.
Yeah.
And Louis Gohmert is treated like a rock star, as Alex Preen reported, at CPAC. So there is this world where these people are rock stars, and they are double down and double down and double down. And that's...
Absolutely.
That's where the oil spill is coming from, if I can combine those.
I wanted to conclude this by just saying that as the David Brookses of the world lie about Louis Gohmert's existence, Louis Gohmert and Rush Limbaugh lie about everything else.
Yeah.
To prop up their existence. And the only thing that holds them together as conservatives is they both depend on a completely fictional past.
Yep. And a memory hole.
Yep. Okay. Yep. So pray continue.
I just want to bring up that apparently you're not allowed to call any woman anywhere attractive anymore. Just stop it. Just stop calling women attractive. It's not a good idea.
I'm going to be a bad feminist. tell me why I have to do
that. Well, there's two examples of this. Apparently, Barack Obama told his good friend and personal friend and campaigner and buddy to the family and speaker at the convention, who is the attorney general of California. She's either going to be the next governor of California or the next Supreme Court nominee. It's up in the air. And he said that she was tough and capable and smart and all these great things and the best looking attorney general in the country. And apparently many in the Twitter sphere took offense at that. On the other hand, also Jerry Hallman, the chairman of the Beaufort County Republican Party, tried to explain that Elizabeth Colbert Bush is a strong candidate and said everybody is really concerned because she's not a bad looking lady. She is a good speaker and she's got some money. In politics, those things are important, and got called to the woodshed by everybody, including Stephen Colbert yesterday. Commenting on a woman's appearance is not. Now I get that. I think it's hard to be a woman, period, in public life and in business and anywhere, and not feel that you're constantly being judged for your appearance.
And yet,
many women work hard at it in order to achieve success. So there's a whole industry devoted to making men and women look physically attractive. You and I are in radio, Driftglass, for that very reason.
And there's a reason why John Kennedy's career took off after television.
Yeah. Yeah. Hair.
A handsome man.
He's young.
Hair and dazzling smile and a beautiful tan and a gorgeous wife. And you know what? None of that worked against him.
I just want to say it. Last week, I said that Congressman Schock is pretty.
Pretty man.
He's very pretty.
Well, and you know that John Kennedy, I believe, after his inaugural parade, never wore a hat again.
Yeah.
Because he looked bad in it.
Yeah.
It's almost like
better with his hair out.
Almost like he was conscious of his appearance and he used it. And he certainly used his wife's elegance.
Oh, yeah.
To endear himself to every European country he traveled in.
And she never smoked on camera.
No.
So, but she was a smoker.
Yes.
And so there's things that people do to modify their appearance and make themselves look. And, you know, there are attractive men and attractive women in public life. Wow. Yeah. and it does, unfortunately, or fortunately, or whatever, make people like you.
Yes.
When you look nice. So
yes, it does. We're genetically programmed.
It is. Yeah.
To select out mates and leaders based on initially physical characteristics. Fortunately, many of us have evolved to the point where we can add things to that category. Not completely slaves, but I know that one of your hidden vices, my dear.
Yes.
Occasionally you will watch a show called, I believe, Millionaire Matchmaker.
Millionaire Matchmaker.
And her motto is?
No sex before monogamy.
And?
Oh, and the penis does the picking.
That's right. Can't fake that. So as much
has a look that California millionaires want, which is solid color cocktail dress, mini skirt, showing off the legs and long hair and not too much makeup, but made up. And she's got this uniform that husband hunters are supposed to wear. You know, it's offensive in some ways. However, for her and for her clientele, it works. So there you go.
As a small aside, I remember having to have on a few occasions painful conversations with younger colleagues who had found out that so-and-so was fired by an asshole boss for no reason at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they were absolutely sure that you just couldn't do that in the workplace.
Yeah.
You just can't fire someone for no reason because you don't like the way they part their hair.
Yes, you can.
And I had to explain, yeah, you can. Yeah. And they had really been raised to believe there was some rule or law or custom where you just don't do things like that. You can't just fire someone for no reason. And it was fell to me and my then ex to explain in several cases that that's the way the world should work.
Yeah.
That isn't the way the world works. And if you approach the world with your chin out, pretending that it is something that it is not, you're going to get flattened. And it doesn't mean you should lose your idealism or think that that's wrong or stop thinking that that's wrong. It is wrong to judge people by their appearance. It is wrong to hold that up as something that you must have to have your opinion
matter.
Validated. But it's also true. And that's just a thing that, you know, we live in this.
Well, and you've said that many times. If your prescription for society first, we change human nature.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have a really, really hard time.
And you're going to be angry all the time.
And I do think that what this guy said in South Carolina about Mrs. Bush, she's Mrs. Bush, by the way.
Yes. Yes, she is.
Stephen Colbert's sister. Who has a career ahead of her. I think she's awesome. I've heard her speak and she's just great. Very smart. And she's got money and she's not unattractive, as he said. You know, she's not a bad looking lady and she's a good speaker. Those are things you need to run for office these days. They've got Mark Sanford and his honesty on the other side. All right.
And there's a fast quote in recognition of one of the late Roger Ebert's late colleagues, Mike Rudko, talking about how Richie Daley, the younger, went to work at a law firm that was something, something Goldman and Daley. I'm getting that completely wrong. And he made a fortune because the name Goldman is gold in Chicago.
Yeah.
No, Richie Daley got his job as mayor because he was the mayor's son.
Is Todd that fair? Spurgeon is that right?
Job
is that because, yeah, is that fair and right?
Of course it's not fair. Yeah. Todd Stroger had no business being president of the Cook County Board at all. He got the job because John Stroger, he's John Stroger's kid. And
let's not start talking about Luke Russert now. That would be just wrong. Yeah. We want to hat tip Alex Perrine, who wrote a very good article. We are not going to talk about 2016.
No.
But it is time for candidates who are going to run for office to start putting together their team. That should be happening as much as possible behind the scenes.
Yes.
And we're really wanting to gear up for 2014 before we gear up for 2016.
Yes.
I'm very much in agreement with people who are like, really, do we need to talk about 2016 and Chris Matthews' constant harping on Hillary Clinton? But Alex Perrine did state the Mark Penn test.
Yes, which is
Hillary Clinton.
as important as it is to put your team together, it's also important to flush the rats into the sea.
Yep.
And you want to tell
me the test is, did you hire Mark Penn to run your campaign?
Which is, yes, you have failed.
You're failing as a candidate.
and Alex Perrine goes down the list of all the hacks and idiots and
and it's true. I mean, I've fallen in this category with certain jobs I've had where people have hired me because I was loyal rather than competent.
Uh-huh.
And the Clintons do that. They hire loyalty. And that's often means that they're sacrificing competence and Hillary can't do that this time.
No, because as he pointed out, if you've given to the Hillary campaign at any point since 2008,
since she dropped out,
you have been paying off her multi-million dollar debt to Mark Penn.
Period.
Who did more, as Mr. Perrine points out, than anyone outside the Obama campaign to make sure she lost that election. He was grotesquely incompetent at his job, and she hired him because he's one of those creeps that is a hanger-on to the Clinton family, along with a whole bunch of others. And that they really have to loyalty is important in politics. It's terribly important. It is the coin of the realm in Chicago politics. Personal family loyalty. It's something out of a game of the Game of Thrones. It is blood and family and loyalty that drive whole swaths of politics. But you got to get rid of these clowns, Hillary. You got to get rid of these people. You can't have those idiots showing their face on camera and calling themselves part of your campaign or a campaign spokesman. You can't have them behind the scenes telling you how you should run your campaign. I'm not the person you should hire, but if you don't get a hold of Nate Silver, toot sweet, and start – and I think
start
you said
– start hiring Obama people.
There should also be the Mark Plouffe test, I think you said.
The David Plouffe
David
test.
Plouffe test.
Yes, there needs to be the David Plouffe test. Did you hire David Plouffe? And if you did, good for you.
And
yeah.
If you did, not serious.
Yeah. Right. Right. I think there's a real space for people, even in gerrymandered district, for a Democratic candidate to come in and say, look, I don't think this is a Republican district or a Democratic district. I think it's a fiscally conservative district.
Yep.
And look what the Republican Congress has done. Just in order to prevent a mild tax increase on billionaires and to keep the oil companies happy, they've decided that we need to close our Head Start program, our airport tower, and furlough our military and so forth. These are not fiscally conservative things to do.
Oh,
absolutely. I found a Tumblr post. It's very short.
Uh-huh.
Just hits it right on the head, as you said. This is from someone named Dr. Krieger, K-R-I-E-G-E-R. Right now, I live in St. Johns County, Florida, which is a solidly Republican county in largely a solidly Republican district. Right now, the running political story all over is the fact that the control tower at the local airport is facing closure due to the sequester. Everyone in town is talking about how the FAA has had time to find money, that the control tower closures nationwide will only save $35 million out of a target of $600
million. Uh-huh.
That it must be some sort of political stunt. Right now, in St. Johns County, a solidly Republican county in a solidly Republican district, all I'm hearing is, I didn't know that the government would stop paying for things I like.
Yeah.
All right. We found out this morning, we are recording this on Friday, and it is getting late. It's already afternoon here. We found out this morning that Obama used Social Security to bluff John Boehner into Crazy Town John Boehner's already rejected Obama's offer to cut Social Security, son of a bitch.
Change CPI, the offer to.
No, that's been rejected by John Boehner as we're not going to increase taxes under any circumstances.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it just the whole thing just turns my stomach, and I'm sure it does yours. I don't exactly know why Barack Obama is doing this.
I don't either.
But you had some thoughts about this morning that I found fascinating.
I have no idea when I'm feeling extremely bitter. It's because he's a complete sellout. When I'm feeling less bitter, it's because he's something of a sellout because he's a politician and they are. But he's bartering the best he knows how to do, which might be
with
bad.
Crazy people.
With absolutely, objectively, clearly, documentably crazy people who will give him nothing and impeach him if he gives them have a chance. And it occurs to me, we are putting him in exactly the same position as a shop steward negotiating with – on behalf of the union with management.
Yeah.
He or she goes behind closed doors and negotiates for wages and benefits and what the future is going to look like and what the outcomes are. And out he comes with our proposed new contract that we get to vote on. And sometimes you come out when times are flush and unions are powerful, it was a 10% raise across the board. And guess what? We're getting dental. Full dental, and everybody has vision coverage, and we're putting up a school fund so your kids can go to college, and that's great. But sometimes, especially since the days of Ronald Reagan firing Patco, when management decided, fuck you, I'm not giving you anything. I'm going to take away as much as I possibly can. If you don't like it, screw you. I will fire everybody. And we'll start over with scab workers or illegal immigrants, whatever I have to
do. Or I'll shut down the company.
Or I'll exactly.
Which is what the Republicans seem to want to do to government,
perfectly willing
period.
To shut the company down.
Yeah, and not move it to anywhere, but just shut it down to fuck you.
And
yeah.
So the shop steward, our negotiator, the head of our union, comes out and says, look, the best deal I could cut was you four guys are laid off. You three guys are fired. I'm sorry, but there's nothing we could do. We're cutting your wages by 5% instead of 20. And you're going to now have to find your own dental coverage. And you're at only 80%. By the way, your retirement is not fully funded anymore. It's 60% funded. And that is the best deal I could cut. Now, is that union rep lying to you? And then you vote on it. Then you vote on the contract. You say, screw you. Let's go on strike. Let's throw this guy out. Let's say, no, no, no. We're not putting up with any of it. We're going to hold out for everything we want, and that's final. That is a legitimate position to take. But the question really comes down to, is your union rep lying to you or not? Is that, in fact, the best deal he or she could cut given the circumstances?
Well, but it wasn't a deal. If he and Boehner had their analogy falls apart.
Yeah.
Because he didn't go meet with Boehner and find out that this was okay with Boehner.
Uh-huh.
He came up with this at the White House in a political calculation.
Absolutely.
That and they're not going to accept this.
But remember the last time he negotiated with Boehner.
Yeah.
A deal that I certainly found appalling.
Yeah.
And difficult to swallow. John Boehner took it to management, you know, because he's there representing management, which is Rush Limbaugh. And they said, fuck you. We're not touching any of it. If you raise taxes a nickel, we'll basically throw you out. He had his own plan shot down by his own caucus.
He did. And they will filibuster their own bills. And they have decided to destroy their own health care plan from the Heritage Foundation written healthcare plan, repeal it without replacing it.
They are
crazy.
Fighting against their own immigration bills from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They're perfectly willing to slash and burn and destroy everything in their past.
Whole
so the
company.
Question,
yep.
The question really is our union rep negotiating in good faith on our behalf? And is he cutting the best possible deal he believes he can given the circumstances that he is presented with? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, it seems to me that he's pushing us to strike.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because management is crazy.
And you know
so
what?
So that someone outside this whole thing, the problem is there is no one outside of
United
the States.
That's right.
To observe this and report on it and say, oh, look, everyone, judge and jury. You know, the workers are right about this.
But when I look at those two minimum wage employees who were on Chris Hayes last night,
heartbreaking,
who were willing to risk everything, to risk the only job they have.
Because they're fed up
and they've had it and they've had enough. Their issue is very simple, relatively speaking. It is, I'm making $7.25 or $7.50 or whatever it is an hour, and I need 11. It is for dignity, for basic survival.
Well, I make $120 a week and my rent is $700.
Yeah. A month. Yeah. And I cannot live on it. It is impossible to live on that.
And the number of times that poor woman brought up a bus pass.
Yes. MetroPass.
The cost of a MetroPass
that
she had to budget for and couldn't.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
It just, every time she said that, it just punched me in the stomach. Oh my God. She's not talking about new clothes for herself a dining out on her own.
No.
Anything. She's talking about getting to work. She can't get to work on what she's being paid.
Right. And the argument is basic human dignity and basic fairness requires. And as we talked about, as the show was on, no corporation is going to, and Chris Hayes said, no corporation is going to give you what you think you need just because it's the right thing to do. They have to be forced to do that.
Yeah, we have to force them to do it.
And then they'll do it. And then they will do it.
Since government has no interest in forcing corporations to do what they must do to preserve human dignity, the workers have to rise up.
Yeah. And that's the voters in this case.
The voters have to rise up. And push. I don't know. They did rise up in 2012, and we'll see what happens. But right now, I'm mad at my union rep.
I am too. But I do recognize, and this is not a, and however, here's why you should still follow him. Yes. It's when you're that worker negotiating for your wage based on MetroCard and your rent, the arithmetic is very straight.
Yep. Yeah.
When you are piling everything on the table, including foreign wars, the interest on the debt, Social Security, the Pentagon budget, which God knows what it goes for, because no one really knows where all that money goes.
And the 15% capital gains tax rate, which is a crime.
Exactly. And carried interest, which is a crime. And on and on and on. And your home mortgage deduction and everything else under the sun is piled onto the table. Mm-hmm. And then we start taking things away and cutting things and holding things in reserve and saying, but the one thing you can't put on the table is taxing anything, anyone, any more than they're already taxed. That's a really different level of negotiating than here are my wages, here are my expenses, and here's the difference.
And, well, and you're dealing with crazy people. There doesn't seem to be any room for Obama to do anything except some sort of 12-dimensional chess, which I'm not sure he's doing, and I'm not excusing him.
Nope.
But it does seem to me like the only option for him, since they won't let him appoint a federal judge, for God's sakes.
Right. Or the head of the consumer protection.
Right. That his only option is to dance around them with things that make me mad, make you mad, that make every liberal furious with him.
Yep.
And dance around Boehner with that, to prove that Boehner is dictated to by crazy people.
And the question, the
and
others
hope that that makes a difference in 2014.
And exactly. And the question that comes from that is prove to who?
Yeah, exactly. Prove to who? Convinced. Prove to David Gregory?
Yeah.
Who are you proving it to?
Exactly. So we haven't answered any questions, but I think we've, I know I'm hungry for lunch and you're waiting on an omelet.
Yeah. And I gotta edit this podcast for our listeners so they can hear it. And thank you for listening. We love
you guys.
And we're going to do Stump the Chump after the music.
Let's talk about something happier, like the death of Roger Ebert.
Let's talk about how much we're going to miss Roger Ebert in social media. Yeah, we will. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Jackson. He is a total Persian fluffball, and as Persian fluffballs are wont to do, he is an aloof cat. You may pet me when I say you may pet me. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at that address or any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union letter on the air. Unless you say otherwise.
Yeah.
So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties give Roger Ebert's handling of illness and death two big thumbs up.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Instead of Stump the Chump, I'd like to do a 15-minute ramble on Glenn Greenwald.
No.
A 20-minute ramble.
No.
Fine.
Stump the Chump.
All right, Stump the Chump. Let's rock and roll, baby.
John in Texas.
Hello, John in Texas.
He is not asking you about Japanese anime. No, he is not.
Because that would be crazy. Because I don't know anything about Japanese anime. Or Italian anime, if there is such a thing. So,
but he wants you to know that a central plot point of the Japanese anime series Neon Genesis Evangelion is borrowed from the work of an American classic science fiction writer.
Okay, so now we're fair.
Yeah, and the concept is called the Human Instrumentality Project.
Yes.
Do you know who wrote that about that?
It was a gentleman by the name of Cordwainer Smith, whose name Harlan Ellison stole his screenwriting pseudonym Cordwainer Bird.
Yes.
Which you should look for. If you ever see that, you'll know that he wrote the script and did not approve of what the people who he gave it to did with the thing. That's his sign. That's his way of saying, fuck these people. Don't watch this movie. I don't approve.
And there's a episode of
Voyage to the Bottom of the
Voyage,
Sea.
Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yeah, written by
Cordwainy Bird.
I believe there's also an episode of The Flying Nun written by Cordwainy Bird, but I can't verify that. I know he wrote one of those things because he wanted to nail Sally Field.
He did.
But, you know, you can forgive him his little peccadilloes from the 60s. Yeah, Cordwainy Smith wrote really interesting science fiction that isn't like anything else you will ever read because they're just not. He writes about big machines and he writes about human future and genetic engineering and space travel, but in ways that are radically different than anyone else is writing. And he still is sort of his own little genre. And they're wonderful stories. They're really terrific. But yeah, Cordwainy Smith.
Very good. And you know his real name. John in Texas said that he would accept either the pen name or the actual name of the author.
Yeah. His real name was Paul Linebarger or Barger, I believe.
Okay. You got that right too.
Who was a highly placed personage in the diplomatic corps, high enough so that he had access to very, very high levels. I believe the Chinese government. And hence his need for an anonymity, as is mine, because I am a well-placed diplomat who works for Tehran.
You do a lot of diplomacy between a 10-year-old and a 10 and a half year old and a 9-year-old around you.
I have to protect my identity to make sure that. And he also embedded, as I recall, he also put some Asian characters in his stories, and not always in terribly complimentary ways, but nobody else was doing it at the time. So,
and he was writing in the 50s, I guess, because he died in 1966, according to John. So, yeah.
The backstory on a lot of science fiction writers is fascinating. We'll do that another day, but it's there from everywhere. They're from every walk of life you could imagine.
All right, and now we're going to read from.
Oh, that's okay. I will vamp by saying that I had lunch this week. You and I made a whirlwind trip to the big city.
Yes, we did.
I had lunch with people from three different eras of my life almost.
Wow. Yeah.
And one of them was a friend and a colleague and a teacher of mine who puts my knowledge of science fiction to shame, who gave me the whole backstory on Game of Thrones, which she knows very well, because the third book of the series is dedicated to her, and a bunch of the great level of detail about, you know, what sort of drinks she used to pour for Robert Heinlein at science fiction conventions. So I'm a little fish in this pond. She is unstumpable, but I'm okay. I hold my own.
I found the note I wanted to read.
Okay.
It's from our friend Raymond.
Hey, Raymond.
And thanks to Raymond on this whirlwind 20-hour trip we took. And we want to take a longer trip to Chicago and have a meetup with our listeners. I hope we can do that this summer.
I hope so, too. I think that'd be a blast.
But this was really a 20-hour trip. And we, thanks to Raymond, you started on the train reading Terry Pratchett. You leaned over to me and shared with me this passage about church ladies that really hit close to home. So Terry Pratchett's very funny. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Raymond, for sending that to us.
Although my science fiction writer or teacher friend says his later stuff is better.
With her nose in the air, huh?
Yeah, I think this is his later stuff. She's referring to stuff he was writing in the 70s. But yeah, anyway, yeah.
So he has two questions for you. What did the computer salesman make sure the monks had before he could sell them a computer in Arthur C. Clarke's 9 Billion Names of God?
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Yeah, in that story, he was replacing their prayer wheels with computers so that they could crank through the 9 billion names of God fast. And I believe he had to make sure they had electricity.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Good story. And then at the end, he's like, so what happens when you hit all 9 billion names? You know, the end of the earth? And I think the monks say something like, nothing that trivial.
In the story Gladys's Gregory, how did the winner want to be served?
Oh, Jesus. I've never heard the story. I don't know. I'm guessing under glass or something.
No,
or
he wanted to be served raw.
Ah!
I don't know if I want to know anything more about that, but
served in science fiction titles or questions always
eaten.
Always provokes the, you know, to serve man, Damon Knight, to serve man. So
right.
I just guessed. I have not read that story, so I don't know.
All right. And finally, Doug in Oakland. And hey, he required me to do a little research in order to ask you this question, but I was happy to do it.
That's right. Piss off my sound editor, Doug. Way to go. Nice job.
No, it was fun because Doug wanted to know if you can answer the three-part Dune question that John Hodgman asked Barack Obama at the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Uh-huh. And so I had to go back and listen to that speech, and it's hilarious. I was really glad to have the opportunity to listen to that. And there's a part in there that I showed, the part that I showed you, not the questions, but I showed you the part where he gets so excited that he takes a puff off of his inhaler.
Yeah.
And said, yeah, that's drift glass right there. Because Asperger's and asthmatics are very close, not only in the dictionary. They're comorbid conditions, let me tell you.
Wow, very good. Very good use of comorbid.
That's why he loves me, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, one of the many, many reasons.
But so I had to go and look up these questions and type them up. But the Dune questions that John Hodgman asked Barack Obama at the White House Correspondents Association dinner.
You should know, I stopped reading after Children of Dune or God Emperor of Dune, whatever the... I'm not going to read Chapter House 9, the Dunening.
Okay, well, according to John Hodgman, he said to President Obama, Don't think about it, sir. These are easy questions. Number one, what is the name of the giant sandworm in the original Freeman language of Dune?
That would be the Shai-Hulud,
also
known as the Maker or Great Maker. My pronunciation might be incorrect since I didn't read the actual pronunciation guide that came with the book. I lied. I did. I just forgot how it's pronounced.
Okay. Well, Doug knew the answer to question two. He didn't. I had to look up the question answers to question one and three. But
okay. You want to ask it in reverse order if he already knew it?
I'll just ask you in the order that John Hodgman read them, because to do it in any other way would be unfair.
Disrespectful. Do you want to give me the answer? I'll tell you what the question is.
Okay. What is a thumper?
A thumper is the gadget that you use to summon a sandworm. You put it on the sand and it makes this repetitive thumping sound that attracts the sandworm.
Yes. And the way John Hodgman asked it was, what is the machine used to summon such a sandworm?
Yeah.
Finally, what is the name of the hallucinogenic vomit that the sandworm expunges when the sandworm is drowned in water? Don't think about it, sir. These are easy questions.
I believe it's the water of life.
That is correct.
That kills the women who drink it, I believe.
I went to this wiki and I have some other questions for you.
I'm sorry, it doesn't kill the women who drink it. It doesn't kill. They transmute it into a hallucinogenic party drug that lets everybody have a good time.
Yeah, I've been reading up on this from the wiki. So extra credit questions from the wiki.
All right.
What must a Freeman do in order to be a man?
I believe he has to ride a sandworm.
That's correct.
Only the children and the old and infirm don't ride. Everyone else rides. When you get old and die, they put you out in the desert and let the worms eat you, like the Viking.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What is the traditional Freeman weapon made from the tooth of a sandworm?
That would be a Chris knife or Christ knife.
You are really something. I cannot stump you on Dune. But you've seen the miniseries, the movie, and you've read at least the first three novels, right?
I haven't seen the director's cut of the movie. 8-hour version that allegedly makes the 3-hour version that is incredibly impossible to follow and just jarringly bad make sense.
I see.
But the miniseries is pretty good. I got to say, it didn't have the budget, the special effects budget that the movie did, but it was pretty good.
Guy from Twin Peaks in it?
That was the movie, Kyle MacLachlan. Yeah, they got it, you know, the still suit that's supposed to recycle your body's moisture. You lose a lot of your moisture through your mouth, through your breathing, through your nose. So it's really important that you have a mask. Mm-hmm. Of course, you couldn't see the actors' faces if you had a mask. So the still suits in the movie didn't have masks on them.
God.
And the special language, the weirding language that the Bene Gesserits used was transformed into a handheld weapon, which was like, really? It just was bad. It was just all these compromises to whatever was the director had in mind. Really screwed up the movie. Mm-hmm. And it just was jarring. Clearly there were big chunks that were cut out and stitched together. It was just a mess. But the miniseries was pretty good. I can recommend it.
Well, it just sounds like you know Dune the way I know Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's fair to say.
And,
fair to say.
That scene where Mr. Collins gets eaten by the sandworm is just awesome.
Very sad.
Right.
Very sad. when he puts the thumper out on the glen, on the moor, to summon the sandworm for his daughters to marry, I think was the thing. I'm pretty sure that's how it goes, right?
All right, and then someone wrote into me.
Uh-huh. Oh, good.
Directly.
Uh-huh.
And asks, I love that you post Pittsburgh Dad videos on Crooks and Liars. Yes, I do. If you haven't seen Pittsburgh Dad. And he says, do you have a connection to Pittsburgh? Yes, I do. I have a connection to Pittsburgh. My parents live in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend the potato pancake Rubens at Max's Allegheny Tavern on the north side.
You have taken me to Max's Allegheny Tavern.
Aren't the potato pancake Rubens awesome?
They are awesome.
And the price is right.
I will.
And the beer is good.
I need to learn how to make those because they're really quite spectacular.
I don't know if you can make them the way that Max's makes them, but we could try.
I'm sure I can't, but I will try. I think it involves pressing all of the moisture out of the shredded potatoes.
Yeah, you've got to really pat them down on paper towel and get them really dry and then fry them. And oh, man. But those Rubens are so good.
They really are.
My dad is not a Pittsburgh dad. He retired to Pittsburgh with my mom to get away from the snow in northwestern Pennsylvania. But he's actually a man of Chicago, as are you, Driftglass.
I am, and I always will be, even though I wasn't born there.
You get along on that level so well.
We do.
Just amazing how that works.
We do. We understand.
But Pittsburgh Dad is very funny and very well written, and the guy who does it just really gets that browbeaten middle class being aggravated by absolutely everybody and having an opinion on everything.
Uh-huh. It's really good.
It is really good.
Pittsburgh Dad is the giant sandworm blue gal of the dad video series.
All right, fine. We're going to stop there.